Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
God, don't need them.
You don't need them?
Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We didn't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts. So when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from SolarNow retailers to get their businesses going.
SolarNow is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technicians, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
All right. We're still in this holiday mode here. Everybody hasn't kicked in. Well, people won't really kick in full back, fence swing until January the 3rd. But anyway, we're here doing our thing, and we're at our ninth consecutive year here doing my It's My House. Today's title, now we're picking up from yesterday with Reba Brown. The jump off title is Team Collaborations 2023 and Collaboration Business Models. And some of the things we'll cover along with Reba is if you need a miracle, collaborate, six-figure, how to have a six-figure, some of you that would like to make six figures or even seven figures in a day. We're talking about anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million in a day. Their business models for that. So we'll talk about that. Collaborative teams, collaborative housing. That we'll touch on it with Reba, collaborative housing, collaborative food supply, and one particular type of business model that we'll be using heavily in 2023 is the show and tell business model, which I think is probably the easiest and the best way to teach somebody something, show and tell. We'll have a little mention about car-free communities. What is a car-free community? It's a community where there's no parking spaces required. You know, in a lot of places, particularly in your larger cities, you have these apartment buildings or condos or downtown spaces that have these large parking, garages. And just imagine if you had a community of people living there that didn't have a car, that didn't need to have a car, how much more space you'll have to live or bring down the prices of cost of living or what have you. That's in the making, car-free communities. So we'll talk about that as well. Okay, and we'll be right back with Reba Brown. Wait a minute, I gotta find my way here. We'll be right back after this.
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back out the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pulled up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family gonna live in there? Is they gonna, I'm gonna get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
Okay, well, that's an example of team collaboration. And like I say, that'll be our primary goal or theme for applied theme for 2023, team collaboration. You know, not what we're going to do individually, but what are we going to do collectively? You don't need a whole lot of people, but anyway, let's start from yesterday with Reba. Good morning, Reba.
I'm rising. Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa. What day of Kwanzaa is this? Is first day or what?
Second day. Let me see.
Second day.
Let me see. So I'm learning this practice all over again. My sons and I used to practice. So the principles, the first day is Umoja, Kujichagulia, self-determination today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let's start from yesterday. Now, what was the idea that you brought up yesterday? You said, like, hospitals have, you know, the emergency room 24/7. So let's take off from that idea.
Right. So the concept is, why not have churches and community centers to have at least 24-hour resources? One, the idea that I launched in 2010 in one church, actually it was a mega church, but we're looking at even small churches to do this. One church would be open for 24 hours. then that way they can reach the people. They can be a resource for the people that may even be passing through that community, but the people in that area, that neighborhood, that would not necessarily know how to find out resources, how to even properly seek resources, be it a pantry, housing, homeless shelters, job resources. So that one building, that one congregation may not necessarily have that resource, but the next day, day number two, each church would have their day. So within so many blocks radius, they could have, let's say an eight-block radius, they could have the next church on this open on the second day, let's say Sunday, and then Sunday be the first day, or Saturday be the first day. But the second day, that next church would be open and share resources as well. But then there'll be obviously schedules and listings, resource information where people could find out what day can I go to get these resources. And then, of course, the church that is opening up their doors for the 24 hours, they would be able to, let's say someone needs to be placed in a shelter. They would actually act as a social service center, like, you know, our social services are funded in our state and in federal government. You know, we could actually become an actual social service agency because the church is the largest social service agency in the world.
Never thought
now,
about
what I was
that
sharing
way,
is that
you're right.
Yeah, because sometimes people would say, when I would pose that question years ago, they would say, Catholic Charities or the Catholic Church. I said, no. No, they would say Catholic Charities, largest social service agency in the world. They would say Catholic Charities or something like that, American Red Cross. I said, no, the church as a whole, community service. They serve the community. They serve the people. So one mega church did actually go with the idea. It's called 27 Unity, 24/7 Unity and Love, 24 hours, each church open for one of the 7 days. That's their day to be open. Of course, let's say, you know, they could switch up, but as long as we have something available, when hospitals, you know, they are a great resource, but then a lot of times people don't just need a hospital. They need maybe someone to talk to, someone to pray with, you know, and I realized some years ago. I realized that actually back in 89 when I was 19 because I was kind of, some people call it a religious trip, but my vision, my late father was a visionary, and so was my mother, and so I would just think out of the box, and I'm like, I see these people out here on the streets. They should be able to go. They don't have a church home, but they should be able to walk into a door. A door should be open. They open up the doors of the church during services, but the doors of the church should be open like the hospital. So that's where my heart is, to encourage. And I'm a grant
writer.
Well,
now
so
with
there.
A hospital,
yeah.
With a hospital, they have an emergency room.
Yes.
And that emergency room is open, like you say, 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
For various type of medical emergencies.
Yeah.
So.
Spiritual emergencies resources.
Now, how would that look for housing emergencies?
Well, in my experience, generally the current social service agencies, a person could go into, let's say, the police station, and they would be allowed to call a shelter or something like that. Hospital, they do have resources, and those two community resources they have where you could actually go, you could call to have someone to have a shelter to pick you up, to pick a person up if they're homeless. They can wait there safely. If, let's say a person is fleeing domestic violence. Men actually Some men have experienced domestic violence as well. But let's say they want to get to safety. They can go to the closest hospital or police station. Also to go into a shelter. That's where the shelter bus, the social service agency, they have vans that would pick a person up from the hospital or the police station, whichever is closer. So that is actually a system. So there's an intake process, and they do explain that over the phone when the shelter is called. They explain that because they have the individual to actually call, because like Brother Chris said, you know, and the other gentleman, who was the other gentleman that was on with us yesterday that was speaking to Chris? Because he said
people may not necessarily want help.
Yeah, yeah. The comment, that was statement that was made was that people may not always want help at that moment, I would add. But, you know, sometimes people don't want to be helped. They're comfortable in their, I'm paraphrasing, they're comfortable in their state. And as the brother was speaking, I was thinking about how the lack of responsibility is there. It's like it takes more effort to do some of the things that many, as we call transients, do to survive, be it how to get the next meal, where they're going to lay their heads, and things like that. However, we got to consider, and I spoke about the literacy deficit, what about going out for a job when I don't even know how to fill out an application, you know, for certain individuals, you know. I don't like filling out paper applications either, and sometimes online they're not always user-friendly. But for someone who has a literacy deficit, then they may have reasons as to say, well, you know, it's no sense in me going out for a job and things like that. So to even get help, that's where the hand up comes in at, because a lot of times I've said over the past few years, and keep in mind some of the things I've gone through as a mother. I was married and then divorced, and there were services that I was eligible for, and one caseworker told me I wasn't entitled. I said, yeah, but I'm eligible. Looking at my income at the time, I was trying to feed my children and things like that. And I've always had family that was available, but I felt that I would just seek out resources just to, you know, figure out what I was going to do, not to necessarily go into debt, but the resources were available. And then I got a bit of wisdom, pearl of wisdom from my dad in that situation. Like, you know, you're a taxpayer. You need some help now, so you go ahead and get you some help. So these are pretty various conversations about who should, but this caseworker told me, well, you know, you're educated, and so you'll have a job in no time. And so for you to go through all of this, because they did have, like, resources that would be where you have to go through, you literally work for, they have now, if a person who, let's say, is homeless or whatever, they could use the public aid office to get their mail, you know, state-related mail. They have Matthew House here in Chicago, so on 37th and Indiana. That's a homelessness resource. But people do sleep there overnight, that they sleep in chairs. They don't have bedding. So a lot of times people are there overnight just to be out from the cold, rather. And so there's a paperwork process for all of these services being offered. So for us, for the 24/7 Unity and Love, we would follow the same process, but be it that they could actually begin working with us day one. That's what I like about, you know, our team that we're forming here, you know, to move on what we're speaking of. People will actually contribute. There'll be people that'll be bringing us food. They're seeing us building these houses. Just, I already know it. So, you know, but there are restaurants that may want to participate. So there are things that we could do to get, you know, the resources that we need, not necessarily my household, but the people that are working with us. There, besides grant writing, you have to wait for grant funding, but there are funds for startup, to seed money for startup projects. innovative projects and things like that. There are actually grants that are available right now. Don't know. Some grants are funded within 30 days. However, individuals who need immediate help, I would say that they can, you know, be sent somewhere. I have a resource in the West Garfield area. I believe that's the West Garfield area. 51st and Seeley. So from time to time, I'll call Reverend Davis, Reverend Otis Davis. He's a carpenter, so he fixes up properties and he houses individuals. So they pay for $400, like for a room. If they don't have any income, he'll invite them into the ministry and then they'll work on some of the properties until, because he actually will, you know, encourage them, maybe give them bus fare to go and an individual bus fare to go and get food stamps, get a medical card, whatever it is that they need, but then they'll be in off of the street. But they do, I believe, like an oral agreement. They don't actually have to sign anything. But if they have food stamps, then once again, like I mentioned yesterday, that they would agree to give a portion of the food stamps in order to contribute to the food. Let's say someone else doesn't have food, or they don't have food stamps, because the church, did they have a pantry at the time? They would get donations from time to time, but I don't know if they actually had a regular pantry. I think when last time I was there, they did have regular food coming in. I did a grant for, I helped the ministry to apply for a grant for the summer. By the time they got paid, each worker who passed out the lunches and things for that summer, by December, they were beginning, they got a $1,000 check. And I remember one family, one mother, she had like 5 or 6 children, so she was happy about that $1,000 check. There was about 3 people that were working. And honestly, I had my agency, my first not-for-profit, Employment Resource and Child Care Network, I had a small community center on 80th and Kedzie. And I didn't even I was so busy helping the other church, I didn't even do the grant for myself. Well, it was an application process. It wasn't a grant, but they do grant the workers. So I partnered with St. Sabina to give out lunches to the children in my area. So there's a model that we create that will give 24/7 unity and love the resources. If they don't have anything readily available, let's say for that night, we would extend resources to, like, let's say, Repair the Breach with Reverend Otis Davis, who has available housing, and then the church as well. You know, I thought about that before. I was
now,
like, so many people are homeless, they can sleep on the church floor, right?
What if you ran this through, let's say, you selected 5, let's say, storefront churches, you know, where you don't have no heavy bureaucracy. How would you set that up with those 5 storefront churches? That might have maybe, they might only have maybe 20 members each.
Okay, a lot of times the smaller churches, they say that they are struggling. So then I would offer grant writing services and even collaboration. Many of the larger grants, let's say we're working with 5 churches, many of the larger grants, let's say the $500,000, million grants, they're not actually, those larger grants are not given unless there is a collaboration, because the federal government wants to diversify. Grantors want to diversify funding. So they don't want just one agency to get all of the money. So let's say one church has a food pantry, and then they have an after-school program.
What if you wanted to set up your own food pantry?
Well, there are resources like the Greater Chicago Food Depository. they actually have classes because they want you to be sanitary, of course. They teach you how to advise people on how to or suggest meal suggestions, how people can put things together, how they should bag the foods up, because you want to have certain things in the food to make in the giveaway bags, the food bags to make a balanced meal. So the bags are oh, and then a way of funding is that they get credit, too. So instead of the churches paying, if let's say one church wants to start their own food pantry, they we could always do a workshop, but I would send them over to the Greater Chicago Food Depository where they can do a free workshop, and they will be able to learn how to balance the meals. They also learn, they have like a budget portion where they teach the volunteers how to budget. And then they get points to get their own food pantry at their church. There are some requirements. They need to have a refrigerator that can keep food at a certain temperature. They supply the thermostat and things like that. As is one year when I did do the summer food program, the summer lunch program, I did sit in the training, and I was able to get, you know, a thermometer and, you know, just some other things that would help to support. Was the the refrigerator was donated by, I believe, St. Thomas Lutheran Church. So, yeah. So then the collaboration, that's where the collaboration comes in, or just extending resources. In some cases, a ministry next up the street, they may say, well, we want to get a larger refrigerator so we can give this refrigerator to that church because they need one. One thing that comes to mind as far as churches and resources with the, let's say, the five churches in that that radius, let's say 8-block radius, we would just see what resources they have and who has what within that cluster of churches, and then see what the community needs. I mean, we could also do a survey of the community. Not only do we have the internet to do these things, but sometimes just in, you know, in the community. You know, it's cold outside now, but then certain local establishments may be able to, they may be open to having maybe an information card, like a survey card and a box. We can get, that could be a job for the young people to put the data into, let's say, our computer or online some type of way. And we could show what the survey is asking for, what the people are asking for in the community, what they need, what resources are already available, and how we can get then so the team, those of us that are working in this effort, 24/7 Unity and Love, would begin to seek out resources to connect those resources to that particular community.
Okay.
Now, National Black Hood University, I remember speaking to Brother Cyron Smith. He ran for Gary Mayer 1 year, but he has National Black Hood University. I'm a member as well. And the concept with National Black Hood University is block by block. So keep in mind, some of these churches are within a residential block. But that's what the National Black Club University does. We identify what our neighbors need. And it's not like a block club per se, but the university is actually global. So we actually see what Africa needs, what Ghana needs, what Nigeria needs, what different states, like, for instance, Wisconsin and Milwaukee and Detroit are our sister cities. So we find out what resources are there and to share. Part of it is to help to sustain the struggling Black-owned businesses. So we have a gas station in Milwaukee, for instance. It's not, it wasn't open, you know, as of yet when I left Milwaukee, but it was owned by an older Black woman, and then it was purchased by a younger black woman, but I saw some construction going on because I went by there. I was trying to get some gas so I could, you know, support, but it wasn't open. They were doing construction. So this year I actually will ask, try to reach out to Mr. Merritt or someone else that I know. My son is actually out in Milwaukee now. He lives there and working. Just to see if that's open, but just resources. Who's doing what and how we could support. Let's say that gas station is hiring. Somebody needs a job. Somewhere here in Chicago. I actually just had someone who ran Off the Alley Productions. I had someone to reach out to me for a resource. And so, you know, I was actually just sharing something that we could put together. Like tonight I'll be at the Grand Ballroom Chicago. I'm usually there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So if Chris is listening, I'll text him as well. I did have his number already in the phone. I was going to invite Chris out to meet the owner, and then we could probably get you on the phone if you're available. So Tuesdays and Thursdays, the Grand Ballroom has regular events. Every third Sunday, there's a live band. But the owner of the Grand Ballroom is an elevator constructor, and he's pretty much open to supporting efforts in the community. But the Grand Ballroom is where we're going to have our educational conference, and so to teach how to build the tiny solar cabins, we're going to actually talk, I guess, offline about how we could set that up, how long it would take to show a video, maybe some video clips, and just give the onlookers an idea of how we're going to do that. And so that creates not only revenue to build, but while we're building, there's a way to actually get some funds extended, let's say, to the young people, you know, a stipend or something where they could be, you know, making some money, the carpenters or licensed carpenters that would be helping. One thing about it, speaking of job resources, I'm going to see if I can get Brother Cyron Smith on the phone, too, on the line, too, to see if he could share more about National Black Community University.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, while you do this, we'll take a break. That'll give you some time to call.
When I think of other recent charges against Bill Cosby, I see a clear case for the MGTOW, or the Men Going On Their Way movement. These days, a man is better for him to go his own way rather than continue to participate in the traditional interpersonal relationships with men and women.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan, and welcome to Narcs and Honey. So I saw a video.
Everybody, everybody, everybody. the shape that I'm in. People start to ask me why. Why I drink so much alcohol. And that ain't all. That ain't all. And I say people are starting to ask me why. Why I never laugh. I don't laugh no more and I don't smile. At all. At all. At all.
What if Chris, well, when Christmas is over, but I, you know what, I didn't play any Christmas music on Christmas Day. Although it's still a holiday season, I'm trying to see if, because one of my favorites is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by the Temptations. Let me see if I have that in my library. I don't like to play Christmas music after Christmas Day. And then another one is James Brown has a Christmas tune. Let's make Christmas something special this year. I do not have them in my, and I got a pretty extensive library here. I do not have them in there. Well, or, I don't know if there's anything such thing as a New Year's record, but. Yeah, I don't like to play Christmas records after December the 25th. And it, typically, you can play them like starting from, some people start after Halloween. But definitely, but anyway, well, mental note for next year. Play Christmas music between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day. This year, I did not play. I don't have that in here. Okay. Well, let's see. All right, Reba, did you have any luck?
No, I did get the voicemail, but keep in mind, Mama Evelyn is a member of
National Black Club University as well. So I just sent out an invitation. So you know what she does with saving our youth.
She's planning for her event, which will be in the 11th year, July, the last Saturday in July, I believe.
Yes, it's always.
But anyway, your event will be February 3rd. Now,
yes.
We're talking about collaborations today. So for the, what's the name of the event again?
Pardon me?
Whoa. Yeah, what's the name of the event?
Okay. It's actually an educational conference. It's Black Youth Metropolis' first annual Sign and Performing Arts and Design educational conference. It's Friday, November 3rd, 2023. So the theme is
you
celebrate
said November
the life.
Or February?
February.
Well, hold on. You got an event for February, right?
Yes, February. Yeah.
Okay. Now,
February,
how
Friday,
much, what's the amount of money that you need for that event?
Well, some of the expenses have been paid. So right now, it's just general funds. We do want to raise a minimum of $5,000. So we had the capacity is 800. Some of the proceeds are going to, because I'm just basically going off of what we talked about for
sorry,
the
wait a minute. How much, all right, how much total, well, how much was it? Before the expense, any expense were paid, what was the total amount of money that you needed to raise to put on the event?
$1,500.
Okay, $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to make at least $1,500 to break even.
Yeah.
All right. Now the amount of money that you want above $1,500 is what?
Well, if we would actually do, we could take a minimum of $500 per our previous conversation about getting this, you know, a basic maybe one or two person tiny solar mobile cabin, $500. 10 of those, we could do that for $5,000.
Okay, hold on.
So
you're talking about 10 tiny houses.
Mm-hmm.
You said 10 tiny houses times what?
10 tiny houses times 500.
That's $5,000.
Yes.
Okay, so you essentially would need to build. Okay, so.
I would say let's break that down to five and then have. $2,500 that
in other
would
words,
help
build a house for $500.
Yes. That would be
okay.
Cover some general materials and things like that. So the tools.
All right, so we're talking about
it. Yes.
We can probably build an 8x8 for that. Okay. Build them for $500. Now, how much would you sell them for?
Well, that is actually the marketing part. That's where I wanted to get, like I spoke with I spoke with CJ, who is the junior executive director of Black Youth Metropolis. I was speaking with him yesterday. So just wanted to get some insight from some of the young people. But at minimum, because we actually talked about selling them for $5,000 each, because then a person doesn't have to worry about a mortgage. So this is not only off the grid, but they're not worried about a mortgage. So we believe that they would sell for at least $5,000. There are prefabricated sets available. You could get them different places, but they're upwards like $8,000 and, you know, and so forth. I've seen them. I'm like, wait a minute. My first list years ago, it wasn't that much.
Okay. Well, let's shoot for that. $500, that's the building budget. All right, because it would it'd probably be about 8x8. That's 64 square feet.
And let's say we do $500 to pay out in stipend for the youth. Or for the individuals. Let's say they get $100. Because
now,
if we're doing, based on this budget.
Let's say you're going to spend $500 on materials.
Right. That's what, yeah.
All right, so we're talking about these. That, you know, that's going to increase. Well, there's got to be something in it for everybody. So let me hear your whole plan now. What $500? That's for materials.
You got a caller?
Well, I'm taking this on my notes. Let's see. All right, $500 building materials. Okay, what's the next item?
All right,
stipend. Okay. How many people are going to have working?
Five. They're $100 each.
All right, five people. You're going to need one of those five people to be skilled. Because they're going to have to make the cut.
Yeah, now this is the thing with the skilled workers, the licensed contractors, right? So as far as skilled, they don't, because I've met some people who aren't licensed, but they are master carpenters and so forth. So when I've had conversations with them, for one, Terry, for instance, they just built a newsstand, which I was like, oh, it looks like a cute little tiny house, so I needed to live up in there. It's actually right up the street. So he and his play brother rebuilt it. I think it caught fire or something, and they rebuilt it. So their master carpenters, I saw how fast that they rebuilt that thing. So one has a license, one doesn't. But they actually some skilled workers that are not even licensed, they wouldn't mind coming on. They do work for hire, but the licensed professionals that I've spoken with, I have conversations with a few that actually used to work out of my office building, where they would actually get the same youth that work on these projects, almost like to get extended training and work experience. Once they work with us, then we refer them to the licensed contractors, and they can work under them as apprentices. So they have their own contracts. So we don't have to necessarily worry about or mind about until we do grants and get funded for a certain grant, because our goal is also to get our own federal tax exempt status, because Employment Resources are initial agency. And we've done all kinds of things across the city. We dissolved at one point. We're going to reinstate. We've spoken with Attorney Richard Blackman, who is our attorney, to get the 1023 application started under the new agency. So currently we're doing business as Employment Resources and Child Care Network. But until we do grants and get our own funding outside of doing fundraisers like this, the contractors that I've spoken with, we don't have anything in writing as of yet, but they are open to working with, and some have actually worked with some young people that were referred to them. And now some of those young people, let's say they were, like, for instance, what is the young man's name? Edward actually was 19. He's now 21. He's still not driving, but he has been making money. He's been with not Innovative Enterprises. I think it's Innovative Enterprises out of 644 East 79th Street, the former Bob Biz Center. And that was actually a small business incubator anyway. So he having a construction business, he didn't, that was his brick and mortar office to work out of. And so they have their, mm-hmm. these contractors have their own. Oh, another one is Fresh Start Construction and Rehab Divas, who were, they have a build, they actually bought a building across the street from the Bob Biz Center where my old office was. So Fresh Start Construction, they take in apprentices as well. So the first getting their hands and feet, for getting their hands on experience, they're getting their feet wet is to work with us, and then we refer them. Because keep in mind, we want to show them some consistency. We need for the young people to show up, so they are actually standards that we want them to go by. I don't have a problem with, you know, following up, helping someone to get a phone, because there are organizations out, Access Wireless have free phone services, even resources to help them get. Now, I did have to be careful, Brother Siron. I took a young person over to the picnic, but the young man was looking for housing, so he couldn't come and live with me, but he did have a phone. He just needed to be able to connect with some others, so I've done, you know, gestures like that. So, yeah.
Okay.
I actually, yeah.
Oh, by the way, Patrick Collins will be in tomorrow.
Excellent. I recall you saying Wednesday. He'll be on Wednesday, so make a note of that.
He'll be in tomorrow.
You spoke with him yesterday. Yeah, you were able to message him, Patrick
Collins. Let's see. Now, all right, so $500 for the building. I've got some building plans for something that size. That's going to be a small tiny house, like 8x8.
Is that what you, is that the seven foot tall? Because remember we talked about maybe if we did need to use a grand ballroom floor on the inside, just to make sure that it could be, even for storing.
No, it'll be able to fit. It's not going to take that
height.
Much space.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be tall enough for me to stand up in, yeah.
Right, but never did get the measurements for the grand ballroom. I think we did speak with Mr. Smith, so I will certainly verify that today.
Well, I'm sure the grand ballroom ceiling go over. The door to get in is 8 feet tall. I mean, 6 feet.
You said the doorway. You said the doorway.
Yeah, the doorway is 6'8".
Okay.
So, if you know it, and the ceiling's got to be taller than the doorway is going to be over 7 feet. I mean, excuse me, the doorway is 6'8", and the ceiling is going to be bare minimum 7 feet. Matter of fact, let me average ceiling height.
Well, yeah, like you said, the grand ballroom, we don't have to worry about that. But average, like my apartment is like really small. I think this ceiling is shorter. I need to get my son to measure this floor height. It's like ceilings are low. But I thought you said the doorway needs to be at.
All right, the doorway is typically the standard size is 6'8".
Okay, so that's
okay, right now. The minimum ceiling height is 7 feet, and that's taller than me.
Okay.
That's the minimum ceiling height. So we're 8x8 will be good for this.
Okay.
An 8 foot ceiling height has, you know, plenty of headroom, even for people my height.
Yeah. Okay. 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 So this.
Okay. So
8x8.
Yeah. Matter of fact, their building plans, matter of fact, you go to any search engine and put 8x8 building plans or 8x8 shed plans or 8x8 tiny house plans. Matter of fact, let me put that in there now. 8, not 9, but 8. Tiny house plans. Yeah, put in 8x8 tiny house plans, and you'll see some pictures with that. And you'll probably get some free plans. That'll give you an idea of the size of it. And some of these are selling for $5,000, $4,000, $2,800, $3,000, $2,000. So, no, not the plans, the buildings themselves.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess there's some.
But yeah, put in 8x8 tiny house plans, and then.
Oh wow, that is cute.
Some of those plans are free. Yeah, some of those are free.
But you'll also see visuals
of what you're working with on the inside.
Okay, yeah, I see that. This is a 6x8 storage shed. 6x8. Let's build a shed, yeah. Start to finish. Okay.
I mean, you have a lot of bedrooms.
Now I can visualize how easy it is.
Right, there you go.
Awesome.
I'm looking at an outhouse here that's pretty cool for an outhouse. I'm going to have to save that one. Outhouse.
And this is something like what you sent me before, 8x8 shed plans, because it's one of the colors. I remember it was green as I put it on my the website, the Triumph of Peace website. Okay, and this is a video.
If you put in that search engine on YouTube, there's plenty of videos too.
So this is from a site called My Outdoor Plan.
Yeah, so that, you know, we.
There's no audio. No audio, no voice.
And there's some pretty cool outhouses on out here. Modern looking.
Outhouses? This says cheap, $374. It's a 4x8 foot storage, though.
Yeah, because 8x8, I wouldn't. You probably won't have any bathroom space.
8x8,
yeah. But you know what? There are some people who, if you put it in an 8x8 tiny house with bathroom, some of them have those little portable composting toilets that you can put in the closet. And then bring it out now you might want to use it outside because you don't want those gases to escape on the inside. But there's a lot of good ideas with 8x8.
Yeah.
Since we got a $500 building materials budget, and then we got to factor in the stipends, because this is something that's got to be, to keep that labor cost down, something that's got to be assembled within an hour, 2 hours max.
Yeah, well, I would say teams of two working on, let's say, right side elevation, left side elevation, and another person working on the front elevation, you know what I'm saying? Maybe the roof be the
Well, you know, fundamentally, all right, you got You got four you got four walls. The walls and the floor are basically the same thing, except the position that they're in and if you cut windows in them, okay, or a doorway. So, you know, you got a team of five. You know what? We might want to do a team of six or seven.
Okay.
You have two people working. And we got four walls, so two, four, six. So you got six people working on three walls at a. Actually, you know what? Let's bump. You know what? Let's go to the nine friends thing. Okay, you got two people each working on each side of the building. You got two people working on the front wall, which has a doorway. Two people, actually four people, two each, on the side walls that might have one window cut in each one of those. And then you have another team or two, that's eight, that are working on the back. Now, if you have a team of 10, you can be working on the floor. So you got a team, let's say, of 12 people that are working. So within an hour, you've got the whole building prefab within an hour with 12 people.
12?
All right,
from nine
let's,
to 12.
Let's look at, hold on, let's break this out by parts. Okay, you got four walls. Okay.
Yeah.
You got a front wall and a back wall. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And you got two sides. So that's four walls. Two people on a team of two on each one of those sides. Now you got a floor. Have two people work on the floor. All right. So that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. And then you got a roof. That's 12 people.
Wait, I'm sorry.
10, 12. You got four walls.
Two people on the back.
Right, you got four walls. Yeah, you hold on. Let's look at the, let's count the parts first. You got four walls.
Right.
You got a floor. You got one floor. And you got one roof.
Right.
All right, that's a total of six parts. Four walls,
right.
One floor, one roof. That's six parts. Put two people, put teams of two on each particular. Just have them specialize in that. All they do, whatever wall they're going to work on, if they're going to work on the floor, they're going to. That's what they do. They don't do nothing else.
Right, that's their area.
So six times two is 12. So within 1 hour, we've got a, we got everything, the basics prefab within 1 hour. 2 hours max. 2 hours max. After they good at it, they should get it down to one. But to start out, we're going to say 2 hours max, they should have their part done. All right, with 12 people.
So based on this $5,000 budget, and the reason why I looked at that goal is because of the five. So now,
how much are you going to pay them as a stipend?
Remember, initially I was only going to be building the one, which was going to be mine.
Okay.
Remember, I purchased materials, some got taken.
Right.
We're going to be building mine as a project. So we're going to look at volunteers and then have some of the young people can actually come in and do community service and get their hours, the community service hours. And we could feed them, give them some lunch or something like that. So there's always ways to cut costs.
Oh, you know what? Wait a minute.
And have it be still
a
fun project.
Reba, we want to feed them. We want to feed, we want to have refreshments there. water, juice, snacks. We want to have that there. But that's not going to cost a lot.
No, and it could be donated too. I do have a resource for that.
Exactly. So we want to have refreshments there for them, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Since we're looking at 12 people, two on each unit, because this will help me get the contractors. Because keep in mind,
We want to knock this out. We talking about in a day.
Yes.
All right. If they can prefab the building parts within 2 hours, all right, or less, but let's say 2 hours max, all right, we got a team of 12. And how much are you paying them? Are we paying them per hour or by the job?
Per project, because keep in mind, it couldn't be per hour. It may be, if it's per hour, they may want to get to 25 an hour. 2 hours would be $150.
If we pay them by the project, you know, the more projects they participate in.
I know that. The young people that I've spoken with, they would do that. First of all, they want to help, right? And these are the young people that I'm grabbing around. So I have 5 young men, okay? And there's a few more in the circle, but these young men, I've sent them, referred them to moving jobs. I was taking them to moving jobs, things like that. One being William Brown, which is the junior executive director of Black Youth Metropolis. So he is a cement mason. He wants to get his hands on putting that cement together too. One of his buddies is also a cement mason, and they both actually, when they finished their class, when they would finish their activity for the day, they would kind of go off into the carpentry class, so they learn some of those things too.
All right, let's say we pay them by the project. They get paid anywhere from $50 to $100 per house.
Yes. 100 sounds good.
Well, and I'm only banking in 100 because they got, but it's got to be done. In other words, in order for them to, all right, if they get their, if they're building a wall, their part of the building's got to be built in under no more than 2 hours, 2 hours or less. Like I said, once they get a groove going on, then, all right, let's say they can prefab a building in 1 hour. So they make $100 for 1 hour's worth of work.
Yeah. Right. Now we got them up to $100 an hour. Yeah, because I was looking, I'm like, why would they have to take?
Well, you know what? I tell you what, to make this simple, $50 per project. Because, you know, the goal is we tell them up front, you're paying $50 per project, you got 2 hours to get this wall together. And it's not complicated, you know, studs. We would teach them from scratch. So if they're able to get that done within 2 hours, all right, get a system down where the more, like say, once you get a house, once you get it completed, you can go on to the next house. So if they did 5 houses or 10 houses in a day, then they can make up to $1,000 a day. And we got 10 houses built in a day, you know.
For the sake of this particular project, because actually, you know, initially I wanted to be able to do, we wouldn't be able to do it, it would be nice if we could go ahead and build a build the tiny house in February, that day or that probably that weekend, have it done that day or that Thursday or the week before.
Here's what we got to line up before. Here's what we got to line up. Number one, we got to decide on the plan we're going to use, because we're going to need a plan. Number two, that's the easy part. And number two is we got to organize a team. Number three is we need to train them on this is what you do. So on February 3rd, we can just assemble it. Now, some of this can be done by Zoom. Yeah, you know, because there's some things that need to be discussed before they even pick up a hammer, nail, or anything like that, or see a piece of material. On a Zoom call or WhatsApp app or whatever technology we're going to use, the first thing we need to do a project overview, and then we also need to do safety. Okay, what you can't come out there with flip-flops. Don't come in there with a pair of tennis shoes on. You know, you need to have some construction boots on or shoes. You need to have work gloves. You need to have goggles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you need to have hard hat, goggles. You know, safety first. Safety first. You can't be coming in with shorts on. Which I doubt that they're going to be doing that in February in Chicago, but I'm just saying. So we need to go over the safety part first, and then we need to have a safety person on hand just in case something freaky happens, and at least a basic, you know, we need to cover it, be prepared for that first. Get them safety first, so and then go from there. But we can do that with Zoom calls to start off with.
Right.
We can do that like today, but you know what? We're not doing it today, but I'm just saying. And February the 3rd will be here before you know it. So we need to take the next few days and I say no later than January the 3rd. That's when everybody starts getting back into action. You need to have at least five or six of those people that say, yes, we're going to go for it and start having meetings no later than the 3rd, because before you know it, February the 3rd will be here.
So I can schedule, we can schedule the, tiny mobile solar cabin, TMSC.
Right.
TMSC project. Okay, so I could schedule that this week. We can actually get that in this week with the young people. They're always playing this Fortnite, and they have the microphones. Now, I know they're playing the games and all that, but they get together just basically daily. They get together.
Yeah, because if we're going to be paying them these stipends, okay, that's going to motivate them.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go back to the...
Wait a minute, Reba. Chris just showed up. Chris? I think it's Chris. All right, well, his mic is open.
Okay, all right. My mic is open then. All right.
Yeah. Chris, we're planning for the February the 3rd event up in Illinois. So we need your feedback on this. Well, all right. Now, Reba's come up with a budget on you know, building just the materials, not the labor. But I figured, for that budget, we're talking maybe an 8x8. But what are your thoughts on what's the most economical, because you're talking about metal when we do your projects. What what would be an economical size for a tiny house? Give us the square footage, and then let's deal with the cost and go from there.
Okay. I would say, I mean, you know, anywhere from 80 to 100, you know, an 8 by 64 square feet, but, you know, a 10 by 10, there's actually quite a bit of room in that little square room. You know, when you start, anytime you're
right.
A little bit less.
Now, we're talking about something. Chris, give us a dimension where we've got, let's say there's a partition wall that will have to go up. So they wanted to take a shower, go to the bathroom or whatever. So let's give us a square footage for that, which will be higher than 64 square feet.
Yeah, it takes, to put a bathroom in one of these tiny homes, you usually need about 120 square feet floor footage. A bathroom is 35 square feet.
Okay.
That gives you that's a full-size bathroom in your house.
Right.
Now, you can make one smaller, you know, but 35 square feet is what that calls for.
Got it.
I don't, you know. When you start looking at anything that's around 100 square feet or less, you know, the bed alone, you got to look at how many square feet that takes. Well, when we do this, then we take it to where we make the bed and fold it up on the wall so that way it disappears? Or do we turn around and make it a couch so that you have a place to sit? You know, there's a lot of options to turning things to multi-use. And that's maybe something we need to sit down. What do we want in it? If it's going to have running water, is it going to be off the grid? Is it going to have a bathroom? Or are you going to have a community bathroom? One thing about Chicago and Illinois here, you know, who wants to go out in the middle of the night and go to a community bathroom and then go back and get in your bed and think you're going back to sleep?
You know what? You just gave me an idea, Chris. We probably need to have three basic models, at least three. The 8x8, the model you just talked about, 120 square feet of water with the 35 square foot minimum bathroom space, and maybe one a little bit larger than that. Because you're absolutely right. Some people, be it wintertime or summertime, they do not want to go to a community bathroom. They just don't want to do it. So I think we need to have at least two, maybe three different models possibly built for that day.
I agree. And plus you got, you know, one, two, three people models. I can take 120,
right.
You know, if I need a 120 square foot unit. That gives you a little front porch, too. But if we put a loft in it, now, that 100 square feet that's down there, you can have a bathroom. I'll take one-third of it. But a full-size bathroom.
Right.
And have a place to make you something to eat. Have a place for your TV and stuff to go on the wall. And have a place to sit.
Right.
You put your sleeping situation up in the attic, and we only make it about 7 foot tall. So
right.
We're not saying you can climb way up in the air here, but you know, just make the kitchen, the whole roof system of that first floor 7 feet. So that way, you got a loft right there, and we only have to go up to about 11 feet to give you a thing that is, you know, 4 feet you can set up in. We go up another foot, you got 5 feet. You know, you can almost stand up in it.
Right.
So that's the.
Well, let's say there. Plan on for February 3rd. If we had three basic ones, and two of those models, they can, if they need to use the bathroom and shower or whatever, there's a private area where there's a separate room door. You go do your business and take a shower or whatever without going outside, because you're right, in a February the 3rd in Chicago, and in the state of Illinois, you got to be a real trooper to go outside to a community bathroom. Particularly if it's not heated.
Now, this bathroom, I don't know, wherever they're planning, they pick a parking lot. They said, we set it up where one of them are off the grid. That's off the grid, but that's not totally where not because,
Chris, you know, your phone is breaking up.
Yeah, Chris, you're breaking up.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay, hopefully this is better.
Yeah.
All right, we need to decide if we're doing off the grid. Off the grid.
Chris, for this, we're doing everything off the grid for February the 3rd.
Off the grid for February 3rd. All right, you want to make
for
sure
February
that
word, yeah.
We add $5,000 to this total. Because when you do when you do an off the grid thing, an off-the-grid thing, when you're talking about needing a tank for potable water, so you got your drinkable water, then you have your gray water tank, and you also have pumps and stuff that come in there so that when it goes down into this drain system, it goes over here to this. But there's
okay.
a few things we have to add. So that costs about $5,000 to take one off the grid from
okay.
the cost of the regular situation. But that's because you're not hooking up to the water, and you're not hooking up to the power, and you're not hooking up to the sewer.
Right.
Those are three things that we have to add to it. And it usually costs around $5,000, you know, to do a house, not a big house, but a little house, in solar. You know, to give
right.
you your battery, give you everything, the inverters, everything that you got to have. So once you have it, you can add to it. So, see, we can actually set it up to where, like, the solar systems are more running
mm-hmm.
more than just one home. We can have the power system power two.
Okay. All right.
Because, like, the homes that Randy's doing, they're 8 foot by 20. We're talking about an 8 by 8. So we can do two houses with that same power system.
All right. Let me see, what else was there? All right, now if we're doing, the floors, the walls, roof, we're doing metal using the machines that you're talking about. How much is that per square foot again?
We want to figure the least square foot you do, it could cost you more. So when you
okay.
do a house, like I was doing a greenhouse takeoff the other day, and it was $30 a square foot, but that was totally framed out and done. $20 a square foot is what I figure on a house.
$20 per square foot.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got 120 square feet times 20. That's what we're talking about for your energy.
Yeah, 2400.
Okay.
And that'll get you the raw material. That'll get you the material for everything. The, you know, that builds the frame.
Okay. All right. All right. So 120 times 20. That's $2,400. Okay.
$2,400. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, we were talking about labor earlier for 120 foot square. Cause I was, maybe I had too many people on it, but let's see what you say. If you've got, well, you got four, and I'm just talking about general parts. You got four walls, and in four walls, I'm including the front of the house and the back of the house. Then you got the floor, and then you got the ceiling. Now, not the ceiling, but the roof. The roof could be an A-frame roof, or it can be a flat roof with a slight pitch to it. You know, it's up.
Yep.
You know, we need. I told Reba that we got to get. We have to decide on a plan, but you know,
and
that's
got to
be done
before
the
next
month.
If we do the slant, if we do a slant, you know, let's do the front wall at say 10 foot, 12 foot. You know,
right.
You got one wall that's going to be 12 foot, and then you go from 12 foot. Let's take it, you know, and drop it over here on the other side, down to 7. So it has quite a rake to it, actually. But it gives you a 7-foot ceiling height in there, and you throw that loft in, and it's the angle, and it's only a sleeping situation. It's one side of it. But when you go from 12-foot to 7-foot, that's 5 feet. And that would be, you know, quite an angle. You know, it's a lot more than you'd normally stick on something that would be more of a flat roof. But we're trying to utilize sleeping space.
Right.
By coming off of the floor footage, because if we can put them in the air to sleep, it gives them more room to live.
Okay.
And you're utilizing the same floor footage, you're just doubling it, you know, you're just adding to it. So that 120 square foot situation actually comes into being about 180 square feet when you add the loft to it.
Right. Here's something that just popped up in my mind. Now, Reba, you've got 3 sons and a grandchild, and I think another one on the way. So 120 square feet is not going to cut it for you.
His name is Elijah Zaire, you guys.
Oh, he's here already?
Grandmother's twice over. Yeah, he's here.
Oh, okay. Well, congratulations. Okay, all right.
Congratulations.
You're going to need grandma's house needs to be bigger than 120 square feet. So, Chris, what do you think it'll be a suitable size?
Not yet.
I don't know
can
about...
make an addition.
Well,
yeah.
I would say if we're looking for a house for 4 people, I could take 1,000 square feet and give each person an individual 100 square feet. So there's 4 bedrooms in it. And then you take the additional 600 square feet and you put 2 bathrooms in it. So that takes another 70 off of it. So now you're sitting at 530. So you take the 530 and you make the kitchen out of 100 square feet of it. So you got a 10 by 10 kitchen. But if you leave that wall open and go over here, now you take the rest of it and make your living situation and you have an eat-in kitchen. With a nice living room. And you can do that.
All right, that's one way to do it. Now, that's everybody under one roof. Now, Reba, you can have it that way, or you can have it that way, or if you do set up, let's say you're on an acre of land. Matter of fact, it can be on even a half acre of land. And you set up a compound where you have the same amount of people, but they have their own cabin, so to speak. You got grandma's house, which would be your house, and then you can probably have where maybe 2 other cabins on that compound where everybody, you know, people have their own space and privacy. You know, just a thought I'm throwing out. Either everybody under one roof, or you can set it up compound cell. What sounds good to you, Reba?
Yeah, we did actually. I like that. We did see something like that. What is it, a video that I watched? The family had their son was living on the property.
Yeah, well,
there
was one
space.
Thing where mom and dad had a house. This is compound style. It was on 2 acres of land. Mom and dad had a house. The son had his own cabin. They all participated in and building, helping each other build their own cabins. Mom and dad had a cabin. The son had his own cabin. The daughter, the sister, she had her own cabin. And then, so they all had their private space. And, you know, they also had a community building, which served as a gathering place for the family. So they're all close on that 2 acres. But yet they all had their privacy on that 2 acres as well.
Oh, I got 2.5 acres, and I can build 11 full-size homes on it. They all have big yards, and I mean huge yards, and they're all separated and individual, just like every other home in the city.
Right.
That's 11 of them on 2.5 acres.
Yeah, I like
room out for garden space too.
Yeah, see, I was sitting here looking at what else I could do on the property. Now, I could build 11 houses, or I could build a 24-unit building.
Yeah, this stuff is really only limited to your imagination.
It really is. So, you know, and that's just doing this two-story building with 12 units. If I did three-story building, I'm doing 36 units.
Right.
So there's, you know, it's unlimited, really. I mean, what you could possibly do. I had the University of Munich. You know, they did something really, really unique. And I've got a picture, and I've got a preliminary design of a floor plan and everything of these things. But they took all of the co-ops across the planet, and they took the best items out of each one of them, and they built this complex. And there's 200 two-bedroom units with three bathrooms in each one of them on that 2.5 acres, plus a five-story building that was for artists that would come from all over the world and have a place to stay, show their art, teach their art, because we want to do these things in multiple locations. So that way they have places they can travel all over and be able to have a place to stay, because artists don't make a lot of money. But they, you know, they love to show their talent. So we were trying to integrate. But it still left over 1 acre of green space on that 2.5 acres with 200 units there, not counting the 5-story building or the 9-story tower that I set up for all of the services that those 200 units would need. So a building running 24 hours a day with the mental capacity to help anybody, with the doctors that might need to be there for anything, and also the resources for job creation, you know, for purpose, for giving people something to look forward to waking up to. So there, you know, it's unlimited, really. And this is the only design ever designed by the University of Munich in Germany for the United States, and I happen to have it.
Okay.
But they did something, you know, really, really cool with what a piece of land can do. And I know up in Chicago there is miles of land that is vacant with nothing on it.
Yeah.
And it used to have houses, it used to have apartments, it used to have things, but it's gone. And now it's not time to turn around and build back the same thing. It's time to build it something they've never had, and that's an opportunity. But I do know
there's a lot of money for innovative projects.
Yes, and when we talk about innovation labs, we don't want to just limit them to children, because every person on earth is a creator. And if you want to come and create something, then you should be welcome to be at an innovation lab so you can explore who you are.
Yeah.
Right.
So we want to put an innovation lab in every little community. It doesn't matter how big it is. It's just having an opportunity for something. And,
you know, Chris, I like that idea, innovation lab. I like that.
Yeah, we need that. I mean, that's what every person needs, because we don't know, and we have thoughts, and we have, you know, people think of things all the time, but it's whether or not they're able to implement them and actually bring them to fact, maybe bring it to product. And the one thing that we can do with these innovation labs is we can actually show children that they can create products that can set them up financially for life.
Yeah.
By just coming up with an idea and making a product better than it already is. because when kids play the game Fortnite or the other games, you know, they're building civilizations.
Yeah.
That's the number one gaming system going on is civilization building. Well, let them truly do it. And that comes down to a video game that I've got designed, and I'm working with college right now to get it brought to market. But I just want to partner with, like, Xbox or PlayStation so that I don't have to come up with all this other stuff. We just want to be able to add it in, but truly let them be the change that they want to see. And when they do this, they will see what they've changed because they can drive across town and see it being built. We know that it needed to be designed. See, this is a way to make those things kind of happen. And we want to work with our children every day. You know, they all get out of school and they're all hungry.
Chris, what do you know? I was talking to a high school friend of mine. I was talking to a high school friend of mine this morning about car-free communities. What do you think about that concept, if you know about it?
Well, I haven't really had much discussion on a car-free community, but there's a lot of people that don't drive, and it's because of, you know, substance abuse, you know, could have seizures. You know, my wife has seizures, so I'm the driver. But if I was dealing with 10 people or 20, well, that just means there's a bus, you know. But these people were going out to get on the city bus because they are not going to turn around here and go get in a car. So I'm all for listening to that. I mean, evidently your friend's got a good idea that needs to be explored, because if one vehicle can take care of 10, 20 people, two vehicles take care of 10, 20 people, even five vehicles that took care of 20 people, we are making a footprint difference, because it ain't 20 vehicles.
Well,
because
Uber, I mean, we're living in the age of Uber and Lyft already.
Right.
So, and yeah, you're right. I'll probably do a podcast on that later this week, but you're right. There are communities where, you know, just a handful of vehicles takes care of the whole community, or could take care of the whole community. Anyway, Reba, any other thoughts?
The gardening as well. On the team for Chicagoland Farmers Initiative, I'm one of the board members, so Chicagoland Farmers Initiative, we are innovating the farming, inner city farming experience. And so Baba Will Crosby is the president. So I'd like to get them on board to join the conversation, at least just to see what we'd like to share as far as innovation for that, because that's another educational component that's been extended to the youth across the globe. Actually, my nieces and nephews, they're in Texas, and so being a teacher, I get students from all over the country. And so National Block Club University also has connects across the globe, so we just want to continue to be teachers and extend the energy of love and sharing so that we can empower one another as we come into contact and across the globe. And sharing what God gives us. So thank you for letting
me
share.
I'm going to say, Reba, is that a farming initiative? Are they doing like community gardens?
Well, it's a new initiative, and it will be a training establishment. So we are in the initial workings of
organizing and getting funds in order. So we have currently put together PowerPoint in order to get members to join the initiative. So as far as inner city farming, currently we're connected with Gregory Bratton, who has farms that he's gardens that he's set up already. But that's actually something that we could do, like Brother L.A. said, the show and tell. So we do have someone in the network, and I actually have worked with Mr. Bratton as well.
Okay.
We don't have the initiative, Chicagoland Farmers Initiative, CFI, we don't have any gardens as of yet, but we do have experience connected on the team.
Well, mm-hmm. The reason what I was going to think about here is if we're going to build this community, and we're going to just, and it doesn't matter if you're wanting to build a garden in any community, we come in on that piece of land. Now, you have that piece of land. You can plant so much on it. If we came in and we built something that was a vertical garden and did it inside, we could actually set it up to do the passive solar greenhouse and have fish, vegetables, and mushrooms. And all of the restaurants in Chicago needs to get on board to buy the gourmet mushrooms from the greenhouse to fund us building more greenhouses.
Yeah, I like that. Evelyn Love, I went by and I saw the restaurant was closed. She launched, she would get her products from the local garden. So I will just reach out to see how she's doing. But, that is an amazing idea.
And there's also Green Top Grocery is one here we have here in Bloomington. It's owned by the people in Bloomington.
Awesome.
So
Green Top
Grocery.
Okay.
Yeah, the Green Top Grocery. And they use nothing but local food. Local sourced farming food, all of it in there. And if you come in and you pay for it in Link, you get double.
Okay. Awesome.
Because, yes, it might cost a little more. The reason they did it is because it cost a little more. And they did the same thing with our farmers market. If you go downtown to our farmers market, and you buy anything there, and you use the Link card, it gives you double.
Okay.
Because when you're buying fresh produce and organic food, it costs a little more money. So we had to make a reason why people that didn't have as much would go out and actually buy the better food for the better nutrients.
That is awesome.
So I think that needs to be part of the initiative. You know, we need to bring food to the community, but we also need to bring the sustainability of how we want to multiply and not necessarily always saying, hey, we need donations. We just need them to get started.
Yeah, circulate the dollars.
Once it's started, that's right, it'll generate itself and it will self-sustain itself. And the fish and the vegetables and the mushrooms can become part of the sustainability, paying for it while you still get to eat it. You're not going to, in a 3-foot by 3-foot bed, you're not going to eat 10 pounds of mushrooms in a week.
Okay? Right.
But you've got 12 or 15 of those beds. So now you're talking about 200 pounds of mushrooms. So when you start talking about anywhere from 100 to 200 pounds of mushrooms per week, hey, we don't have no shelf life here. And when you're trying to get a head of lettuce, I want you to realize the head of lettuce that you're getting at the grocery store, it took 2 weeks for it to get there.
Okay.
How long would it last in your refrigerator if you got it in the next day?
Right. Yeah. I get your point. Because I tend to have more than I could use, and then I'm like, So I just bought out my food chopper that I got myself for Christmas. So I said, So I really don't like celebrate holidays too much, but I said, when I went online and got that. So I just, you know, I take advantage of sales, and I'm like, okay, I'll get this for myself. So I have some other items, but this chopper, it pretty much helped, you know, because I got to use it, you know. So I'm leaning toward veganism anyway. But when you mention a vertical garden, I do realize that the soil is not considered quality in a city. It makes sense. The vertical garden, and then you mentioned fish along with mushroom and other items. So I am connected to Young Enterprising Society. I'll send you a link, Chris, because I do have your number. And Brother LA, I don't know. I don't think they ever came online with us, but I'll send you, just give you guys an update on what they're doing. They start off with an aquaponics facility that was Khayyam El-Amin's idea for the Ochoa factory in Chicago State, on the Chicago State University campus. And so now they have a 40-unit building in Milwaukee. But the aquaponics facility is extended to 67th and Terry, I believe. So in the Inglewood area, they have a house that they made into an aquaponics facility. They had an outdoor garden with a flower bed. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the aquaponics. But when you mentioned fish, that's what I thought about, because they had...
No, it is aquaponics. But we're growing fish, vegetables, and mushrooms, because that's Carlos's patent.
Yeah. Excellent. So I'll send you guys my video clip, too, when we did the tour of the aquaponics facility at the Chicago State University. We toured some students from Bogan High School over there, and I took my sons, and it was really nice. And then Chef Gio Carter, she is Lawton Merritt. He's the curriculum developer. He's going to be one of the speakers at the event. So his niece, Geolicia Carter, Chef Gio, she was featured on Oprah. She used the basil and a few other herbs, and she made a delicious meal from the things that were grown in the aquaponics facility, and the children loved it too. So, yeah. So I wonder if somebody got that film. So I will share with you guys, and so we could certainly follow up. If you'd like to have an offline, that's what I wanted to mention. Lastly, Brother Lay, if you wanted to have an offline, you know, meeting, you mentioned Zoom and so forth. So we can invite you, Chris,
for your on-the-ground team, particularly the ones that are going to be on this stipend per project, you need to have those offline. A Zoom call or WhatsApp app or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or a Clubhouse. Clubhouse is easy, mm-hmm. too. Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, because Vail is on Clubhouse. All of them probably are. 4T, that's what his nickname is. So Terrell is his name. So he's the new father. Well, one of them. Well, besides my son, he actually wasn't familiar with Clubhouse. So we'll introduce him to Clubhouse. That'll be great to get us all into a Clubhouse room, and then we could, you know, work some things out. Get them acclimated to what the goal is. Thank you so much, and thanks, Chris.
Okay. Let's see, tomorrow, Patrick Collins, Marva Collins' son, should be on here tomorrow. So we're going to try to add the Marva Collins way onto this as well. But let's see, Reba, your event's the third, so we need to start having, those Clubhouse meetings to organize a team. You know, we need to be well prepared before the third, so the third will go smoothly.
Yeah. So, Chris, I was. Yeah.
No, Reba, you got a room on Clubhouse, right?
I do. Oh, Chris, you have one too? Okay, great. Yeah.
Hey, either
one. It doesn't matter to me. We can be in Chris's room or Reba's room. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't think the app is. I haven't been on in a while. My app might not be on there.
How many people do you have in your little club?
I have not been on in a while. I'm re-uploading the app again. So
I was gonna say I've had like five rooms, little short rooms, but there is like 500 or 600 people that's already following the club. So we can we can branch from that one, or we can go to the Dream Habitat.
Let's start off with Chris's room. Since he's got that number built up to 500, because my room I have on there, which is Don't Sell Mama's House, I got 101 in that one. So Chris has more people, so let's just start off with his room. We will have your people moving to that room. And what's the day, Tuesday? And
now, one other thing I want you to think about here is I can open up rooms in clubs that I'm part of that have 500,000 people.
Okay.
So just know we have that option to not only do it in one club, we can do it many multiples. I mean, the sustainable leadership room, it wouldn't matter. We can go any one of those clubs, the breakfast club, anything we wanted to do. All I have to do is say something to somebody, and guess what? Here it is, scheduled and doing it. And then it's bringing in the option of opportunity for everybody to realize what we're doing. And what would be really cool is if one day we sit here and we worked out something with all the clubs on Clubhouse, and we had topics about these projects, but each one of them is ultimately all talking about the same thing. Can you imagine the message that we get around the world if every club on Clubhouse is actually having the topic about a solution?
Right.
Yeah. We've been in some. We got a lot of information. It's really – Clubhouse, it's an amazing opportunity to share, resources. So, yeah.
Oh, it is.
Powerful people across the globe that really have the right heart, They have what I call good spirits.
I mean, a man last night, I was in this room, and Don, that was on the show yesterday, came in the room. I pulled him up, and it's the Heal Yourself Tour, and it's a world tour that they're getting something moving here. It's quite a little movement. But this guy Omar came in there last night, and oh my goodness. This guy, I mean, he's, there ain't a name that he didn't drop that he don't know, but he got, mentored. And not only mentored by one, he got mentored by all of these huge mentors that are out here, these coaches and these things. And, he had an experience in life that one of the points was last night is our children need to get these experiences. They need to have a mentor. And not only our children, but every person needs a mentor, needs more than one mentor. These people, when they go on there and they'll pour out things, that's free. All you got to do is be there and paying attention. But it was amazing to connect with this guy. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what winds up happening with all of our next year here off the people that I get to meet, but when Don came in, I told him, I said, you see that guy just popped in right next to you? I said, he's got 2 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
"But I continued. Wow. Well, I got to catch up." So I've been in a room with, Tank, the R&B singer, Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child. Lewis Howard. Grant Cardone. I've been in the room. So it's just really amazing to connect with so many people who have wisdom to share. So pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. And it's nice when they don't ask for money to give it to you. A lot of, you know, they are getting to the point now where they're, you know, setting up these different little retreats and things. And but I heard them, you know, these guys were used to doing those where you go to a hotel and you get all these people in a room and they do their little seminars. Well, they were making $1 million in a weekend.
Yeah. Okay?
Well, they're not making that no more. So now they're getting down to where they're only making, you know, altogether about $60,000, and they're getting to do it every 2 months. So from $1 million from a weekend to $60,000, you know, they start asking each other questions on what should we do? Because, you know, how we reach people and how we made money, you can't do that anymore. And I'm just sitting back, like, and I wanted to say something, and I didn't, because I don't want to give them the answer. I do, but I don't want. I didn't want to do it right there. And but like when I was in with Kevin Harrington and the guy that owns FUBU, I'm trying to think of his name. The Sharks. You know, these are the sharks that are on television, you know. And when I asked him a question, everybody was hitting them, you know, with doing a pitches like they were on Shark Tank, you know. And I just picked their brain. I wanted to know. I asked them questions that could help me reach people. And they were shocked because here I was the only charity on stage. And I didn't ask them for nothing except for their, mm-hmm. their wisdom.
Right.
I said, you guys have to deal with product, you know, placement and this and that. And, you know, whether or not it's a good demographic going to make it happen. You know, what is the clothes going to be or this or that, whatever it is. Right. I said, now here's my problem. How do I come into a city to empower all of the programs that are going on and make them better than what they are, because we give them more opportunities to do things without them feeling threatened that I'm trying to come in and take over. And then Sean, is that his name? I'm trying to think of the guy's name on FUBU there, because they gave me great information, you know, and I've been working at it. And it wasn't come in and just try to drop it all on them. It was have a conversation and let you come up with those things. Even though they're already there, let them be your idea. You just feed them. And I was like, okay, I can do that. Yeah. And that's, you know, I came on the show today and you guys were going. You guys were going, and then I came in. But I'm just coming in to just button up what we're talking about, because everybody has an idea. Everybody does, and it all matters. So when you give them, if you had 7.8 billion ideas today given you, that's more ideas than you'll ever be able to look at. You'll never be able to look at them. And we're all having it, and we just had one. We just had one. Everybody had a second right there. It only takes a moment. How many moments are in a day?
That's true.
Things that we're missing and we don't have, but we need to be able to tap into that and be more open to not what somebody's going to take from us, but what we're going to be able to leave behind.
That's right.
So...
Are you Dream Habitat? Is that one of your rooms?
Yeah, it's we call it Hope for Dream Habitat, because Dream Habitat is Carlos and Maria, the architects and stuff that created the passive solar greenhouse. But what we've done they didn't have a. Yeah, I'll send you a 3D flyover. So it'll walk you right through it. It's a tutorial of the whole thing. But it'll fly you around it. But it's in the middle of the desert. So I want you to look at that. That's something that grows. It grows fish, vegetables, and mushrooms in the middle of the desert without anybody touching it.
Okay. So I'm looking. I've opened my clubhouse back up after I don't know how many months, Brother LA. What does your pick icon look like on your?
It is the planet Earth being held in a set of hands with a peace sign on it. And that means peace on Earth, and it's in your hands.
What's the name of your room?
Hope, housing our people everywhere.
Oh, okay. That's the acronym.
An acronym, yeah. It's also humans on planet Earth.
Right, I heard that I saw Habitat and
yeah, Dream Habitat is one of them, so you want to join that club.
Okay.
And we'll send you an invite to the house where the lounge and all that, where you can just pop in there and we can have a conversation.
Embracing life, hope. So I put the, I abbreviated. Do I need to abbreviate?
You know what? It might be H period, O period, P. I don't know if it did it that way, if I put it in there that way or not, but I think I just put in housing our people everywhere.
Okay.
But I just know that hope is the club.
Okay.
Because it has my picture, my little thing that says hope on it. But look up Chris Collins down at the bottom of my bio. It's going to have the club.
I see you. I see it now. I see it. 542 members. Good for you. So I'm going to have a pre-meeting with the young people so they could, you know how to conduct themselves. Not that they don't. We just want to set some house rules. So they'll be prepared not only to take notes. Now, mind you, Chris, I'm a teacher, so I want to remind you, so they'll learn that they're going to be in school. We're going to learn from each other. We're going to be students and teachers at the same time, all of us, because I tell you, when you guys meet Zale, he's a go-getter. He's something else, and all of them are talented. Everybody has their special skills, and some of them share the same skills. So Chris Zale, he's 20, I think he's 20 years old, and my youngest son is 22, so they went to Job Corps together. So they are cement masons and carpenters. Well, they're learning to. They are certified in cement masonry. They're learning carpentry skills at the same time.
Now, are they learning the union carpentry skills?
What's interesting is that their instructor encouraged them to get union memberships. They did not do that. They've been doing light hauling work and all that. This will kind of re-engage them into their trade field. They'll, you know, so this opportunity. Because we talked and I told them, you guys are going to help build my tiny house. And we can build you guys, so it's going to help Mama Reba build her tiny house.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. And, no, that's great. I love Job Corps. You know, Job Corps, I went down to Katrina in 2005, and there was thousands of people that came through this Job Corps Habitat Camp, Habitat for Humanity, and Job Corps had come together, and they built this camp, and people from all over the country every week they would come and change out every week. People would be here for a week, and I happen to go there every Monday, and I would take the new group of people and go and show them what they're going to do to these shotgun houses for the week.
Oh.
And I met a woman, met a lot of people, but, you know, I built a house right there, right where this camp is. But it's 2,500 square feet, and it's on stilts. And this woman, 2 months ago, I get a phone call from I have a partnership where I'm on the board for kids that have aged out of the foster care.
Okay,
and
yeah.
So at 16 years old, they age out. So what we have is a thing called Dosey House, and it is a forever home. And
okay.
They'll never age out.
Yeah.
Awesome. Not that they have to stay there, but they can always come and stay.
Right.
We want them to realize they that people do care, and it matters about how you're going to be, because if you're struggling through life, then it's just harder on me. And people don't realize that all the struggles that we're all going, everybody goes through, because everybody goes through struggles.
Yeah.
But when you go through them alone, they're harder. But if you can't come up with a solution to it and it becomes more of a problem, it costs all of us more money for you to not have. And this woman, I'm on the phone with four women, and they asked me who I, you know, what she tells us, tell them who you are, you know. And I never in my life said that, how I did it that day. But
yeah.
I do remember how I opened it out. And and I just opened the conversation with, I am alive. And
right.
When I said something about building a home where the eye came across for Hurricane Katrina in 2006, this woman says, was that in Purlington, Mississippi? And I said, yeah. And she says, I met you. And I said,
wow.
You not only met me, I said, you met me at that Habitat camp. And she said, yes, I did. I said, we not only met, we broke bread and ate together.
Okay.
So that was 17 years ago.
Wow.
So never underestimate the power of planting a seed, because she came to me with a 50-story building in downtown Houston, and we're going to do 1,000 or more transitional units and make transitional housing to get the homeless off the street in Houston.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I realize that's an issue there, too. I'm learning more about the global issues. I only watch the news when I visit the Grand Ballroom. So, because I don't have cable, my sons and I watch movies together, you know, two of them live away from
You don't have an antenna?
I have one somewhere. I don't even really miss regular TV.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, though, that little digital antenna, I got one you don't even have to plug in, and that thing will pick
I got a smart TV, too, though.
It picked up 55 channels out here in the middle of the country, 25 miles from any metropolis.
Okay. What is it called?
Three.
They're
digital antennas. You can get it at Walmart.
Oh, you mean the ones that they first started giving out when we went digital?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
I've seen one at get all that stuff.
You said go where?
Go to Walmart.
Because I've seen one at my friend's resale shop. I did recently see one. I looked at it, but I was like, I don't need that.
Oh, yeah, man. No, that thing. My mom was paying for a cable bill. And I was like, Mom, you like watching Law and Order. I said, A&E is on this stupid thing. I eliminated her. She was paying $100-something a month for cable.
Yeah.
And I eliminated that for her by going and buying a $35 antenna.
Yeah, well, I have a smart TV, so I have all that stuff on there.
Roku and all that because you're on the internet with it. That's perfectly fine too. I get it. I was just thinking of free. I don't even have the internet.
I didn't even have
the internet at the house, so that
the only internet I
had was on my phone.
Yeah. You know what, Chris, when you mentioned, and Brother L.A., I thank you for giving us a few minutes to share. The thing is, I worked for a boys group home, and they would be ideal for them to do. It would be ideal because I brought some activities for them, and then they went on field trips. So I will definitely call Reverend Chandler is promoting his book. He no longer works there. He's with an international ministry now. But I will reach out to the boys' group home right in the Inglewood area and just see if they will want to help build. I don't know if some of the guys are still there. Some of them aged out, and that was the sad thing, too. You mentioned, Chris, about the Forever House, I think you called it, right? Is that the name of it?
Forever Home, yep.
Forever
Ghosty
Home.
House is what
some
it's
of
called.
The, yeah, some of the guys aged out, and it was heartbreaking because they had nowhere to go. One young man, the first guy who aged out when I was there, well, the one who aged out, one, the executive director pointed out to me, you know, he called him. He was walking down the block where the house is located, boys' group home, and he told him, he said, you know, you can always, you know, come and talk to me, but they, you know, the program, and he aged out. And so that was really, really sad because, you know, he didn't know how he was doing. The first time, you know, Baba was like, you know, he's like, I know he hit me talking to him, but the second time he caught him. So the guy seemed to be doing okay. He had a girlfriend and they were working some things out. But then he sat on the porch and talked. So that is an amazing thing to just say, okay, well, some programs, they age out when they have young people placed. The group homes and so forth, but then you age out. Now, they aged out at 18 at the group home that I was working at. It was called
In Texas, they age out at 16. And
wow.
Most of them are, they wind up in prison. The number's
yeah.
very, very high.
Right.
And, or dead. And,
mm-hmm.
We this is like throwing a human being away.
Yeah.
Okay. And to me, this is the time we should be embracing them more than ever because this is where they can go and do. They're adults.
Yeah. And I just tell my students, I said, who's going to take care of me when I get older?
And that's the problem with the U.S. See, we worry about that. I mean, heck, I'm 50, you know. we do worry about that here in the U.S. And, you know, yesterday we talked about a problem with it. But over in India, they don't do that. And there's more people in India than they are here, but they don't do that.
Yeah.
This is the only place that does it. We need to, you know, work on these problems. And what the one thing about it is if there is a problem with an organization that's in your area, I want to put a solution to that problem. I want to claim it because we can change it. It don't have to continue to be a problem. There's a problem with the homeless problem here in this community that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
It's been here for 100 years. And the problem's been here for 100 years. Why should that be a problem? And it's a simple solution. Do you know they had an empty building that was bigger than their shelter?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of addressing the problem, they left the building empty?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm asking them, can I have the building? Can I have the building?
Mm-hmm.
If I can have the building, I'm going to change the thing around here. Well, they don't want no change because they get money.
Mm-hmm.
And this place, mm-hmm. they had a 100-year anniversary. A homeless shelter had a 100-year anniversary and was so proud and celebrating so much. And I'm on the phone. And I said, you know, congratulations, you know, for being here for 100 years. I said, but how come you still have problems?
That even sounds funny.
I was like,
you know, just sitting.
And they hung up on me. They said, we got to go.
Not expanding.
And I was like, come on,
yeah,
man. Don't make me pee in your Wheaties.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did. I took a big old crap in it. You know, I was like, but guess what? What you're doing to these people is crap. Because if you got a 12-year-old son and you're a woman, your son's going to the adults.
Yeah.
Is that a solution?
Yeah, that's terrible.
Same thing with the girl. So if you got a man, and here's the, and if you have two kids, they're splitting them up. Your whole family.
Yeah.
Now, how are you going to feel sleeping over here when you don't know who's sleeping next to your kid?
Yeah.
And one of the problems to these homes, to the, well, I was going to say to the a shelter. If you're going to, dormitory shelters are not a solution. They're not even really a temporary solution because they're dangerous.
Yeah.
And people stress about what they do have on losing it because people steal it. And one of the things that I wanted to address to that is I can take that dormitory that you got your bunk beds on, and I can make individual sleeping situations in each one of those, just like it's a big dormitory already. But instead of looking like a dormitory when it's done, they look like hallways, and you have a door, and you get inside your place. And you lock your stuff up. You don't have to carry it with you down the street. Lock it up.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody going to break into it. But it's yours. It's a temporary situation, but this is to move you forward and help you not be so, it's hard to be out on the street.
Yeah.
It will wear you out to have nothing.
And the stress.
That's a lot of energy being wasted.
Yeah.
So that does need to be addressed. You know, in every way. But we don't need to age them out. No one needs to be thrown away. Don't throw anybody to the wolves. And do you want all this private prison to continue? Because every time somebody goes in, they come out with more information than they ever went in with. So now they're more educated on ways to take from you or hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out with nothing. I just ran into a guy the other day, gave him a ride. He tells me when I asked him, I said, what did you get when you got out of prison 15 days ago? He said, a bus ticket into a city that won't take him into the shelter. What? I don't understand.
Brother Lynn,
wait a minute, everybody, we got in because we're way in overtime. So before Blog Talk blocks, I'm not blocks, it drops us cold and we don't know what happened. So I'm going to end it now because we're like way over time. Okay, so we'll be back tomorrow. Everyone have a good rest of